Hi, I'm Bob Taper with LearnVisualStudio.net. In this final video in the series, I want to simply wrap up the series and provide a few suggestions about where to look for answers for your questions and issues that will inevitably pop up as you continue to work learning more and more about .NET. We'll also talk about the right way and the wrong way to ask for help on the internet, specifically forums for programmers, and a few suggestions on key topics that you should be focusing on next in your self-directed training and study. So first, let me say that some of the ideas that we covered in this video series, especially some of the more advanced concepts that I discussed, might take weeks or even months of thinking about to really digest. Honestly, there are things that I learned 10 years ago that I'm still wrapping my head around. It's important to keep pushing forward and keep learning. Many times, I need to read what many different blogs and books and videos have to say about a topic before it really starts to resonate with me. Each person who talks or writes about a given topic can say things slightly in a different manner, which helps cement or clarify ideas. So don't deprive yourself of other resources that may cover similar material that will help say things in ways that might actually click with you. And I think it's also important to keep in mind that you don't need to know everything there is to know about a given topic in order to be productive. Some concepts, for example, object-oriented programming, they become more obvious after you've made some mistakes. So you need to get your hands dirty in the code. You need to make the mistakes, and that will help progress your learning. And while we were going through the topic matter, I hope that you kept in mind that the intent of this series was not only to supply some basic instruction, but also to supply some information as a means of explaining what certain code examples are doing that you might find out on the internet or in books, or perhaps to provide some insights to help you understand the purpose of the .NET Framework class library or the .NET Framework runtime, how it's structured, what it's doing behind the scenes, and so on. So hopefully it was successful in that regard. So let's talk in practical terms for a moment. You know, chances are, at some point, you're going to get stuck. In the process of learning and building applications, you're going to run into an error message that you can't make any sense of. It happens to everybody. In fact, I think a big part of what makes programming a valuable skill is the experience that you've gained from working through all the various problems and all the issues that you will inevitably run into. Now, the good news is that there's a large community of other developers inside and outside of Microsoft that can help you push past these sorts of problems. In my experience, there are just a handful of issues that beginners tend to run into. The first one is configuration, installation, or permissions types of issues. And this could be some sort of strange error that happens in Visual Studio when it attempts to load up a project or compile a project or debug a project. So when I hit an error that I've never seen before, I usually go through a couple of different steps. And I just do this, I don't really have a checklist per se, it's just what I've come to do in my own mind. First of all, I start with researching the topic. I use key phrases, especially the error messages that I see on screen. It's vitally important to use those, surround them in quotes in your favorite search engine. That'll help you get closer to a resolution. I may spend as much as 10 to 15 minutes just scanning through various blogs or forums on MSDN or around the internet to find a potential solution. If I find an article that I really need to read to gain more understanding, I might spend another 15 to 20 minutes just trying to get past that issue. If I'm mindful about my search terms, I almost always find a solution. I think that a lot of beginners fail with finding solutions to their problems because they become impatient with the error messages, or they don't quite know how to search correctly. Using the exact phrases inside of the error messages that you see on screen, surrounded with double quotes, will get you closer to finding people that have had similar issues and have posted how they were able to resolve those issues. Now, the second thing, if I can't find anything that kind of fits what I'm looking for, doesn't quite match, before I do something potentially destructive or time-consuming, and I'm convinced that this is an issue specifically with my instance of Visual Studio, not with the code, we'll get to that in just a bit, but with Visual Studio specifically, then I will start by shutting down Visual Studio and see if that resolves the problem. If that doesn't fix the problem, then I may reboot the computer and see if that resolves the problem. If that doesn't fix the problem, I may attempt to uninstall Visual Studio or the Express Editions and reinstall it. Now, let me caution you right there. I almost never have to do this. It's been years since I've had to do this, and you shouldn't start here, but it certainly is an option. The final option is to completely reset the computer, reinstall the operating system, Visual Studio, everything. And I call this the nuclear option because you're going to spend hours and hours going through this exercise. Again, it's been years since I've had to do anything quite this drastic. However, there have been occasions where, for whatever reason, something I had on my computer, some game I installed, some application I installed, overwrote something that Visual Studio needed, and the easiest way to get back to a normal state is to start over. Whenever I've had to do that in the past, it's been so painful that I've become very regimented when I work with my computer that I use specifically for work. I generally try to keep the computer I use for work with Visual Studio installed on it pristine. In fact, I keep the computer that I use to surf the internet or play games on separate from the computer that I use with Visual Studio or to write software. It's not a matter of Visual Studio being temperamental. It's just that there's a lot of resources that Visual Studio is counting on to be unadulterated. So I try to keep that machine updated with new operating system updates, using Windows Update and more, but I try to keep it separate from just my play computer. All right. Now, short of something wrong with my operating system or Visual Studio, most of the issues that I run into or that I've seen beginners experience involve one of several broad categories of problems. First of all, the unexpected order of events firing. Now, in a simple application like the console window applications we've written, we only had to really worry about one event. But as you'll probably learn when you focus on a display technology like Windows Forms or WPF or Metro-style applications using Windows RT or ASP.NET applications, there are many events that are potentially fired that occur for what may seem like an innocuous operation like a form load or a button click. The solution to these sorts of issues are to set breakpoints in multiple places in your code to better understand when things are happening, when certain events are being fired, to identify how code that's handling two events may be actually battling or fighting each other. Perhaps on displaying data on screen, there might be one event that displays the data. There might be another event that is cleaning or clearing the data off screen, and those are not happening in the order that you expected them to, and so you're not seeing the data you wanted to see. This happens to beginners more than you might first imagine. Another typical problem that beginners run into is when they attempt to connect to outside resources like a file or a database or a website. Again, reading the error message closely and doing a search using the error messages that you might experience or trying to use key phrases that you think might describe the issue is the key to getting this sort of thing resolved. So I would caution you in this. If you copy an example from a book or from an article, you may have to modify that example just a little bit, taking into account the connection information based on where a resource is located on your hard drive or on the network. This is particularly true when you're dealing with connection strings to databases. In fact, there's a whole website devoted to connection strings to databases just to help people who've run into that problem so many times. You'll get to that a little bit later. We'll talk about databases in just a little bit. Another common issue that beginners run into is using the wrong tool or the wrong technology for the job at hand, shoehorning a technology that you're already familiar with into a situation where it really doesn't fit, in lieu of learning a better technology that's well suited for the task at hand. This might be because you have a fundamental misunderstanding of the technology and what it was designed to do originally, what its limitations are. and not really knowing what the other options are that are available to you. So what I recommend doing is this: continue reading books and articles, learn new techniques and technologies. I have a very large collection of books on programming. I haven't read every single book, but typically what I do when I get a brand new book is I crack it open, look at the table of contents for 10 to 15 minutes, look through every single page, look at the examples that are listed in that book. And I make a mental map of the kinds of information that I can expect to glean from that given resource. I seriously do this. Then, whenever I need to make some sort of decision in the future for an application that I'm building, or I run into a problem, or I know something is coming up in my application design, I'll pull two or three books from my shelf. I'll start reviewing specific parts of those books to help refresh my mind and help get a game plan together for further development. And you could do the same thing with blogs and articles online. In fact, I subscribe to about 25 blogs, and I use this service online that sends me updates from every blog that I subscribe to via email, because I know that myself, I know that I'm going to check email every single day, so it forces me to review those blog posts. And so I scan the blog post and then I archive it, tag it for future reference. But in all these cases, I'm building a library of resources and an overall framework and roadmap in my mind of existing technologies where I can go for more information and so on. Then, whenever I need to utilize a given technology or technique in an application, I at that point will dig deeper and become an instant expert, I guess you could say. There are a few geniuses out there that have photographic memories. They eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff. They know it inside and out. And for the rest of us, we simply have to be organized and have a general knowledge of a lot of different areas in programming and then dive deeper as needed. Okay? So I think one vital skill as a modern software developer is to become great at searching on the internet to help solve issues that you run into. It might sound easier to just ask a question on the forums and let somebody else solve your problem for you, but I assure you that actually will take longer to ask a question on a forum than just searching online, refining your searches, spending time doing that to find a solution. I almost never have to ask a question in forums because a simple search will almost always yield a clue as to what I did wrong or what the real issue is. Keep in mind that there are literally millions of people working in the .NET framework on a daily basis on their full-time jobs. This means that there is a huge body of knowledge out there that you can tap into whenever you need it. Virtually any issue that you can run into, somebody has already experienced it and and there's a solution posted somewhere online. It's just a matter of ferreting it out using good search engine habits and techniques. Now, let's suppose for a moment that you're at your wit's end. You've patiently worked through search results, and everything you've tried, nothing seems to work, okay? Well, maybe at that point you need to ask for some help or some guidance, somebody to nudge you in the right direction. All right, here's what you need to do to get a resolution for the questions that you have. If you don't follow these steps, the results that you'll get from posting online will be greatly diminished. Here is what I've learned about asking questions online. First of all, you have to become an empathetic requester. By empathetic, I mean put yourself in the shoes of somebody reading your post trying to help you out. Give people who are willing to help enough information so that they can pinpoint the issue that you're having. This means that you need to clearly state what you're looking for. So there's a checklist of things that you could include in your post. Maybe you should jot these down or refer back to them whenever you need it. Start by posting your question in the right place. Find the right category in a given forum or website to post your question in. For example, an easy one: posting a C# question in a Visual Basic forum is not going to be all that productive. All right, be smart about this. Secondly, choose a simple, clear title for your post so that it attracts attention to people who can help you and it saves everybody's time. If I see a forum post that says, "Please help, urgent," I generally skip it. Why? Because it's so vague and there's so many people asking questions, I'm going to jump into the ones that I think I can help with. If the question title says, "Link to objects query yielding unexpected results," okay, That might be a question I could help with, so I might jump in and read it and see what I can do. Include a short synopsis of the issue, including the exact error message or the behavior that you're experiencing. Describe what you expect to happen and what happened instead. Also include a screenshot if at all possible. Ideally, you would even go as far as to open up an image editing program to draw a box or an arrow pointing to the part of the screenshot that you want to draw our attention to. Include a code example. Change up any super secret information that might be encoded in the example that you are going to post if you have to. But without a snippet of code, many problems are unsolvable. So you have to at least include some code. Now, having said that, let me add this caveat. Be choosy about which code snippet you post. Nothing is more frustrating than looking at somebody else's question, and he posts 200 lines of code in their question. You really need to identify just those lines of code that might be involved in your issue. If a given forum has some special HTML tags or short codes that you can use to wrap around the code snippet that you want to post, then please, you should use that. It will help. It'll help identify those sections of your post that are intended to be understood as code versus those that are just thick paragraphs of text or bullet points. Okay. Include in your post, what have you tried so far to fix the problem? Did this lead you to rule out several possibilities? Again, empathize with the reader of your post. This will result in a faster resolution. Otherwise, people will start with the obvious solutions that you've already worked past and will move forward from there. So go ahead and eliminate those right up at the start and say what you've already tried. Important, list the operating system that you're using, which version of Visual Studio and which programming language you're using, which updates and service packs have been applied to your given instance of Visual Studio and the operating system. This matters more than you might realize. Okay. Moving on, suppose there's a resolution to the issue. You've worked through, people have helped you, you've been nudged in the right direction, you were able to use that and kind of become a detective and figure out the issue and solve it. Awesome. One of the suggestions that somebody made was helpful, got you pointed in the right direction. That's great. Now take a moment to go back and to describe exactly what you did to resolve the issue step by step, as a means of helping others in the future and as a means of articulating for your own future understanding exactly what the issue was and what went wrong. Okay, chances are that you're going to be the one who needs to refer back to that at some future point in time. It would be nice to just be able to search for your own username in the forums and to find every post that you posted as a reminder what you did to solve that problem. So the frustration that you save may be your own in the future. And then finally, and I think this goes for all interactions online, as some of us have learned the hard way, be polite in all instances. People don't owe you an answer. They'll be helping you in their spare time and as a means of furthering their own understanding. So say please and thank you and be mindful and cognizant of other people's sacrifice to help you out. Okay? Now, you might be wondering, where should I go to ask questions? It really depends. Now, there are a number of non-Microsoft websites online that I could possibly point you to, but Microsoft actually has a really nice set of forums and websites. I think, personally, the best place to start is the Microsoft Visual Studio Developer Center. So let's go to Bing, or your favorite search engine, and then type in Visual Studio Developers Center. Search for that, and that should yield one of the top results. Once you get there to the Visual Studio Developer Center, you should be able to find the forums link. It may not look exactly like this. They change their page layout often, but in the forums, you'll be able to find a series of categories. Now, if you scroll down near the bottom, at least at this point in time, Here's the Visual Basic section where you can ask general Visual Basic questions. I imagine you'll probably be posting here early on and then getting more specific into some other areas as time goes on. And if you scroll down a little bit further, here are a place to post general C# questions. And I think, again, pointing you in those directions would be a great place to start, at least after this video series. The good thing about this particular place is that it's monitored often by Microsoft employees and also Microsoft Most Valuable Professionals, MVPs. These are knowledgeable people who have demonstrated their willingness to help and volunteer to do so, and Microsoft has recognized them as such, so it's a great place to go. All right, so now let's wrap up by talking about where do you go from here? Well, let's suppose that you followed along in this series, you were writing the code as I was writing it, you got at least your hands dirty, and you got this fundamental basis of knowledge in either C# or Visual Basic. Now, you're not done, there's still a lot of practice and opportunity to grow in this regard, but now you should have a solid base to build on, right? So no matter what type of application that you want to build, there are a few other fundamentals that you really should become acquainted with and have in your tool belt. First of all, you should learn at some point how to work with relational databases like SQL Server. You should learn how to access the data that's stored in a database using either ADO.NET or the newer or subsection of ADO.NET called the Entity Framework. And there's also a link to entities that uses that link syntax to utilize the Entity Framework API within ADO.NET. I know that may sound confusing, but at some point you'll dive in, you'll see what I mean with this terminology. Either way you go, when you're working with data inside of Visual Studio, there are a number of visual tools that you can use that allow you to drag and drop things to data bind controls to data on the back end. And that's a great way to get started, but I would encourage you to quickly push past and grow past the visual designers in Visual Studio. But again, great place to start, great place to get your feet wet, but you will need to have some understanding of both how to create, read, update, and delete data from database tables, like database tables stored in SQL Server, and then how to access those within your application using one of those frameworks within the .NET Framework class library called ADO.NET and Entity Framework and so on. All right, next up, you're going to need to choose a front-end technology to master, that which displays the content to the user. Now, in our examples, we've been using a console window. Most likely, you're not going to want to do that, right? You're going to want to either have a native Windows application, or you're going to want to create a web-based application or something along those lines. And you have no lack of options in this area, including ASP.NET Web Forms, ASP.NET MVC, Silverlight, Windows Forms, Windows Presentation Foundation, and the latest Metro-style WinRT applications. Now, if you're not sure which of these directions to go in, if you don't already have a requirement from work and you just need some general guidance, let me suggest that at the very least, you learn HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And there will be a Channel 9 Fundamental series on each of these three topics coming soon, if not already posted on the Fundamental site. But this will give you the broadest coverage for building both web-based applications and now Metro-style WinRT-based applications for future versions of Windows, so HTML, CSS, JavaScript. And finally, I'd like to recommend that you learn more about as you learn more about programming, you're going to come to realize that a lot of effort goes into making your code reusable, maintainable, and scalable. And so therefore, you're going to want to learn about basic software design patterns, techniques, and tactics. And so here are a few keywords that you're likely going to want to learn more about. Each of these could spawn an entire book or video series. And I've already alluded to object-oriented programming, but that's really the biggie. That's kind of the starting point. Beyond that, you're going to want to learn more about N-tier software development. Why would you split your software into logical tiers? What problem is that trying to solve, and how can you accomplish this in code? And As a final jumping off point, let me recommend that you learn the acronym SOLID. What does it stand for? Well, SOLID is a collection of simple design patterns. And if you can get the concepts behind SOLID under your belt, then you're going to be better off than a bunch of developers today. Okay, so I encourage you to push forward in that direction. All right, so much to learn, so little time. It's a problem that plagues us all. But this is what makes software development so fun and challenging, and also a little daunting. There's a bunch of resources on the internet, not the least of which is Channel 9 and MSDN. However, allow me at this final moment to make a plug for my website, www.learnvisualstudio.net, which at the time when I record this has 150 hours of training that's geared towards getting somebody who's a beginner up and running as fast as possible, pointing out what I feel are the key ideas that you need to master. It includes homework assignments with solutions, interaction with me about specific video topics via QA section, and a lot more. So please check that out. All right, so as I close, I hope you found this to be a valuable resource. If you did, let Microsoft know. If there's anything else that I can do to help, please let me know. As I said at the outset, you can post a question in the comments that are associated with the given video that you're watching, or you can write me personally at bob@learnvisualstudio.net, and I'll try to help. All right, I wish you great success in your career. Good luck.